My name is Ryan Smithson. I'm 32 years old. It is May 3rd, 2018. We are in Chicago, Illinois, and I'm being interviewed by Sam, who is playing me on stage for an adaptation of my memoir, Ghosts of War.
My name is Sam Cray. I am 23 years old. It is May 3rd, 2018. We are in Chicago, Illinois, and I am playing Ryan in a stage adaptation of his book, Ghosts of War. So, the first question is actually two-parter. That Jason, our director, kind of helped me figure these out. So, the two-part question. What was it like for you the first time you saw the show ever?
Mm-hmm.
And then what was it like for you the first time you saw me doing the show? Because I'm the third actor to portray your story.
So the first time, it's a lot of emotions. I mean, it's like any play or anything, any art well made. It's emotional ups and downs. So I think I feel this a lot of the same emotions that the audience does. Obviously, I'm connected to them in a different way than I think the average person would be. I think people are moved by it in their own way, and I think for me, it continues to be cathartic to hear this story, to share it with people, because it, one of the main reasons I wrote it was for therapy. And so to relive some of those moments was pretty jarring. When Bill, the gentleman who wrote it, who adapted it for the stage, when he first contacted me, he asked me if I wanted to have a hand in what made it into the stage play, what didn't. And I said, no. I said, I want you to take it and run with it. Do your thing. I want to see how you interpret it and what you choose to highlight. And then, you know, the actor himself will take certain parts and highlight them in certain ways and make choices. And so me seeing it for the first time, I didn't really know what to expect. I didn't know what was going to be in there. I didn't know what stories were going to make it. And I was really pleased with how Bill put it together and some of the choices he made in the adaptation and then some of the choices that the actor made. Hmm. But it was a series of emotions. It was ups and downs. It was surreal to see someone playing me. And also it was in my hometown in this theater that I had gone to school plays all my life going to. And to see someone telling my story was really weird and an honor. It was just really special to be able to share it with so many people. And this thing grew from this essay I wrote in an English class to this thing that, you know, thousands of people are seeing on stage, which is just awesome. And so seeing you, so you were the third actor who had done it.
And, number three.
And the best by far. And I'm not just saying that because you're sitting here in front of me. but again, some of the choices that you made and the way you chose to especially highlight the humorous parts, because that stuff is weaved in and out of the story. And some of the chapters in the book are all about that.
Yep.
But none of those made it into the play.
Yeah.
Because they're I guess, irrelevant in a 90-minute story where you can only tell so many of them.
We got to try and pack a whole guy's life.
Yeah, exactly. And so some of those humorous stories that weren't in there really say a lot about the experience of soldiering and my own experiences and how I sort of saw things and interpreted things and how it changed me. And what was really apparent when I saw you do it was you picked up on that and you knew that was important. And so there are certain lines that a mediocre actor, I think, wouldn't pick up on as humorous and deliver them in a humorous way. And you did, and I think you nailed them.
Well, what was one of your favorite moments of that? That you like the most, or you think about, or that you can remember at least?
Yeah, I think so. There is one scene that is very obviously funny with the where you stand up and you put the gun on your hip and you got the American flag in the background and it's all
so
of the,
ridiculous.
and the way you do that in that cheesy sort of newsreel 1940s propaganda story, that like story voice, wow, and the Krauts come and wow, and all that. The way you delivered that was just, I thought, brilliant. The other actors, they brought out the sort of stereotype of that and the sort of the social critique that was kind of happening there a little bit when I wrote it. But you really brought it to life. And then especially the end of that you did really different from anyone else is at the end you say, you know, roll credits.
Mm-hmm.
And you sort of let off and there's this moment of a turn where you realize it's not like that. It's not glorious all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the audience feels it when you deliver the line that way. And the other actors sort of kept that roll credits as part of the news. Roll credits.
Really?
And yeah, okay. Yeah. And you sort of just let it off and sort of like just shrug and say, yeah.
Well, and it's interesting because, you know, and this isn't about, it wasn't about comparing me to the other actors, obviously. Because I actually know the original actor who played the role, Ryan McBride, he's in the other show, Letters Home,
which great.
Is a beautiful show. He won't see it. He won't be in it when you see it. But yeah, he's a fantastic actor. The reason I ask,
they were both great.
Oh yeah.
Not to say they weren't.
Well, the reason I ask is because I feel like, you know, after having done this show, it's a hard show not to throw your entire being into. You know what I mean? So I have felt a very special connection with you, you know, which you may not even know from a distance. You know what I mean? I mean, to put it in perspective, I've lived in your head for almost a year now,
right.
Or tried to. And I know that's weird to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jason Durace, the director of the show, of this particular run of the show, we spent hours and hours and hours talking about you. And what you may think about this, you know, how you might approach this. If we had to go back, you know what I mean? Because that's what we're doing. You know, we're going back in time.
Yeah.
Reliving those moments. And of course, the show isn't, I'm not doing an imitation of you. I can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not doing an impression of you. I have to make those choices as me.
Mm-hmm.
Living under your given circumstances, you know what I mean? But anyways, the next question, I guess, is how has your experience changed over the years? Seeing the show, revisiting your book, talking with people. I mean, you wrote the book when you were right out of the war, 21.
Yeah.
And how old are you now?
32.
That's a lot of time for ideas and the world to change.
Sure.
What do you think is one of the biggest things that has changed for you since you've written that book? It could be political. It could be religious. It could just be, you know, something about yourself or your family.
Well, I wrote the first chapter, what would become the first chapter. It was just an essay at the time. But I was 20 years old when I wrote the first chapter. And I was a year out of the war. And I was I wasn't writing for any particular audience. I wasn't trying to say anything. I just wanted to get this story off my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And I turned it into that professor, and she said, "You need to keep writing, A. Mm-hmm. And B, are you seeking therapy?" and I told her that it felt therapeutic to write it. And so she encouraged me to keep going, and she encouraged me to read it in front of the class. And I said, "Absolutely hell no, I'm not doing that." And she said, "Well, all right, well, think about it. At the end of the semester, I have everyone read one piece they wrote, and I would love for you to read it." And so molded over, and it's toward the end of the semester. We had that day, and I had almost didn't do it, and then I raised my hand, and I wanted to read it, and it was really hard to get through. And then...
But something pushed you.
Yes.
To do that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's the crux of this story, is that things happen to you in life, and you don't control a lot of that, but what you do control are your choices and how you react to things. And that's the sort of big lesson I think that I've learned, and I've tried to adapt into my everyday life, and to realize that you don't control everything, but what you do control is really powerful, your attitude and your perseverance, or as my wife might call it, stubbornness, to just drive on, you know, and that can be a double-edged sword, I guess. But yep. I read that story to the class, and this one student, one of the reasons I was reluctant to talk to was because of the politics, because it was a controversial kind of war, and Bush was president at the time, and
yeah.
I was in a classroom with a bunch of 18-year-olds, and I didn't know what they would think of me if they knew how I had served, and so none of them knew I was in the Army. I didn't really talk about it. I didn't want to hear it. I didn't want to go there. It was over.
Yep.
And he raised his hand, and he said, "I want you to know you gave me a whole different perspective on what's happening over there." And that, so immediately... from the time I wrote that first story to the time I shared it, which was only a matter of, 10 weeks or so, my whole understanding of that story and my story changed, from I need to get this stuff off my chest to I need to share this with people. And I don't intend to speak for every soldier. I don't want to come off as if my story is any more important than anyone else. But I think one of the things that makes it special, I think one of the reasons that people respond to it, is because it is an everyman story. I was a reservist. I was an engineer. I wasn't a Navy SEAL sniper, anything yeah. that Hollywood normally picks up on. And that's what's important. And so then it evolved, obviously, from there. That was now 11 years ago or so. When I read the first chapter out loud in front of a room full of people that were basically strangers, it felt sad. I felt a little ashamed to have witnessed it. And that story was one of the more difficult ones that I had from being overseas, and I had many positive ones as well, but you don't need to heal from the positive ones so much. And so when I read that, it was therapeutic, because I couldn't change it, right? I can't control what happened. It happened. But I could communicate it with people, and communicate in a way that they felt that pain too.
Well, and there's a line in the show where we say, for a whole year, I've avoided talking about the time that I spent at war
mm-hmm.
to everyone, to my parents and even Heather. A year in the grand scheme of your life is not a long time.
No.
But a year after coming out of war, I'm sure it can feel like a lifetime.
Yeah.
Keeping things inside you. And I would say almost every single person who comes to see the show, there are interactions that they have with me that I wish you could see.
Mm.
They treat me as if I'm you.
Yeah. Well, then I think you've done your job.
Well, I just mean they're so touched and moved by the story. And obviously, you know, a lot of vets come to see the show.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that together, you and I. But it's also the normal civilians, right, who come to see the show, the average person. I can't tell you how many times people go, wow, I get it.
Mm.
I'm not sure if I, like, understand it, but something changed in how I think about this. You know what I mean? Which kind of brings me to my next question. Next question. Since the war, since the book, since this play has been made, how has that affected your life now? How has it changed you or the people around you? Your family, your wife, maybe,
you know,
maybe someday your kids?
You know, it forces me to pay attention and to keep up on these things, because it's easy to lose track, and, you know, you get busy, life and kids, and, you know, I'm out of the Army now, and so I don't have to care. And there's only so much I can do. I'm not going to turn the tide in Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria or anywhere else we are. But the book, when it went to HarperCollins, they wanted to gear it toward young people. And I never intended that. I didn't write it really for any audience, which is a mistake as a writer. You're only supposed to know your audience. But I didn't, you know, I was a very young writer. And I wasn't writing it for an audience. But the audience was the American people, if you were to ask me at the time, probably. But they saw the potential for it to speak to young people who were trying to understand these wars and what they were about and what the people in them were like. Because otherwise, their only impression is Call of Duty and Hollywood's version of what it's like to be a soldier. And
American Sniper or whatever.
And that's not wrong, but it's a very small percentage. And so they geared it that way, and I am now, because of that, I go to high schools all the time. I go to colleges. I talk to young people who are thinking of enlisting. And or who have, you know, their parents were in the war and they've never talked about it. And so to be able to share that message with them is really, really important to me.
Well, you know, writing this book, you know, we talked about it on the show and we just talked about it earlier, was therapeutic for you, right? How does it feel to know that your story is incredibly therapeutic to everyone who hears it, you know, or God forbid he has even saved lives?
It's the writer's dream. And
because
so,
it's true.
Yeah. And, you know? And that's, you know, I can take credit for that, for, the writing and the power of the words. Cause everyone has a story. Everyone has a battle that they've fought. Everyone is climbing some mountain. But not everyone can put it in words in a way that moves people. And so I'm blessed to have that, and to have had those people like my professor and other folks in my life who have said, you need to use this talent you have. And I didn't always listen to them, but when I did, and I've been able to hone it and have this lightning in a bottle with it, it is just, you know, I feel very lucky. And, you know, it's funny, talk about saving lives, and I don't know if that has happened, but for every kid who has told me, you know, I never really thought about enlisting in the Army until I read your book, there is a kid who has come up and said, you know, I always thought I would join the Army, mm-hmm. and then I read your book. Mm-hmm. And I think what is really cool about that and what I've learned is that it doesn't matter what I'm trying to say. As the writer, it doesn't matter, even if I have an agenda with something I'm writing, it doesn't matter. What matters is how it touches the person on the other end, and that's where the magic happens. That's what art means.
Well, and to me, I mean, that's why that makes sense, is because for me, your story is less about war and more about a young man, a young person's experience with humanity, 19 to 20 to 21, like how we, with Bazuna Cat, you know what I mean? I mean, for me and Jason, the director, Bazuna Cat was the epitome of the show. Mm-hmm. And for people who don't know what that is, read the book. But to know that your story, this really isn't every man's story. And you're not a war hero, right? You're not.
No.
Just like a line in the show, they're not going to make movies about me. There'll be no video games about my about EQ Platoon. But now you are a hero. Your story is a hero's story because of what you've done after.
Well, thank you.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, you are my hero. Mm. You've become my hero, and I'm lucky enough to call you my friend.
Thank you.
You know? So I think if there's one... at the very end of the show, I'll put it into context. There's a line that I say, and when the war is over, I'm sitting at home one day, and I miss it. I hold on to it. But I know that it can't come back. If there's one memory that you could hold on from the war, what would it be?
I don't know that there's one.
That's a hard question.
You know, it's the people that you want to hold on to, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've moved on. People have families, and some are still in the Army. Some have gone full time. Some are out. And, you know, you keep in touch with as many as you can. But I think that's one of the things that's one of the big lessons I learned through writing this is that when I first came home, I wanted to just forget it all.
Hmm.
It was it was over. It was in the past. And so you just drive on. And the Army trained you really well how to do that. Well, you have to do that to complete the mission. You know, they test you, right? And that's half of what basic training is it's half actually training and learning what you need to know, and it's half just being able to hold your head together under duress. And so you're trained to, no matter what, just keep marching forward. And, you know, not that you're invincible. Not that every person is going to just keep marching forward. And sometimes you will be too scared to move, but you try. And so that's how they train you to live. And it works for war. But back in the real world, you can't make a marriage survive because you just want to. It's not a mission. And so it takes constant work, and it takes reflection. It takes honesty and humility. And that's one of the things that I realized I was losing when I didn't talk about anything, because I just walled myself off. And you know what? All that stuff's in the past. It's over. It doesn't matter. It does matter, because there are a lot of great moments and a lot of great people that you do need to hold on to. And that's what I realized in writing that first story and writing especially the Bazuna Cat stories. I had these really wonderful vignettes from my time over there.
Yeah.
And I met some great people, both in the Army and civilians and other armies and other branches and things that you connect with even for just a minute. And it matters somehow. You have to have faith that it matters.
Yeah, and we talk about faith at the end of the show. How is your view on faith changed? Or how has it not changed?
I think
since the
fundamental truth of it, that you have to have faith that doing the right thing matters.
Yep.
And being true to yourself as much as you can matters. And the people and the connections you make, all that stuff is important. Because life is, you know, it's always a, so you're always dealing with something, and it's easy to get lost in the details. And I got to remind myself to just look at my wife and be thankful.
Yeah.
Once in a while. And so faith is, you know, there's a lot of things you could wrap into that. But, you know, religion fascinates me. I think it's one of the few things that touches every society and every part of history ever. Is there some kind of religion? There's also some kind of war. Also music, which is weird.
Oh, yeah.
art in some form or another. And so those universal things, I think, are what I most try to understand. And so I've gone on in my studies, and I have a master's degree now, and I've studied the stuff. I've studied some of that stuff to a point of madness. I don't know. I think every faith, every version of faith has something very universal and common, hence universal. And I don't know that I've figured it out, but I've come to the conclusion that I don't think we're meant to figure it out. At least I'm not yet.
You know, Neil deGrasse Tyson has one of my favorite quotes ever, which kind of ties into faith, but also the universe. He says, the universe does not owe you the right to, like, let you make sense of it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of probably butchered that quote. but it goes along, I mean, with the end of that show, there's, when people come up and talk to me after the show, especially when we're doing it here in Chicago without you there, because usually you get to come and we get to do it together, you know, talk to the audience and all that. The thing people have the hardest time with that I wish you were there to help me with in talking to them is they have the hardest time at the end of the show when we're kind of talking about faith, and especially this line. And not like they're angry, or they have the hardest time wrapping their heads around it because they know they feel a certain way about it, but they don't know how to feel about it. At the very end of the show, I say, war is hell, but war is also paradise. It encompasses all that we are, all that we were, and all that we will be. And they have a really hard time with that line. What would you say to them if they ask you about that? What were you trying to say with that?
I'm trying to say something that can't be said. And that's why it's so tough, especially as a writer, because all you have is words as a writer. Other forms of art have their limitations and their strengths. But you're trying to put something into words that really can't be put into words. I can't fully convey what it's like. And what's funny about that line in particular, and there's a few of these, when I was writing this book, I didn't read any war lit at all. And I had never really read a lot of that.
Yeah.
I was not a kid who always wanted to be a G.I. Joe, and I didn't have a bachelor's degree already when I went in, and I was exposed to some stuff in college. I didn't really read war lit. And especially when I was writing, I purposely didn't read it. And when I was all done, and it got published, I said, you know what, I'm going to read some of these. And I read, like, The Red Badge of Courage, and I read The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien.
Oh, yeah.
And there is a paragraph or two in, I think it's How to Tell a True War Story, I think, in The Things They Carried.
Yeah.
And it's almost verbatim what I had written about
really?
War is hell, but war is also paradise. It might have been a couple different words in there, but he goes on a similar rant.
Yeah.
And I read that. I was like, holy shit. I can't believe that I plagiarized. But I think that speaks to the universal nature of war. And even though that was a different war, a different time, different weapons, different circumstances, there's stuff in the Odyssey that touches those same themes.
Well, the experience of it. And one of my favorite lines in the show is actually right at the very beginning. when you say, I'll just smile because I know how much you can't understand. And it's not a, sorry, you're not going to get this type of thing. You know what I mean? You know, I'm not inviting you into this story. It's just, no matter how many words I try and use to describe it, unless you've seen what I've seen and felt what I've felt, you can't understand.
Yeah.
And I think that's true with also other things in life, too.
Sure, sure. You know?
And that's the point. I guess, because we're getting to the end, if there's anything, any sort of lesson or anything at all that, say, years from now, your kids hear this or your great-grandkids hear this or whatever, what would you want them to know about you and why you did it? Joined the army, wrote the book, decided to sit here and talk to me. What does it mean to you?
I don't know. I don't know why I did anything. I don't know why I do anything, right? And I think what it gets down to is the faith that it'll work out. You'll figure it out. And you'll make mistakes. And you'll fall down. And you always have a choice to give up. And you always have the choice to try harder. And I think that's what the book is about. It's a breakdown and build up, the way basic training is. Life will do that. And if you let it, life will build you up and make you stronger. And so I don't fully know what I'm doing when I go into anything. It's sort of, life is the perpetual game of improv.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so many people get caught up trying to plan and trying to control things. And sometimes that's necessary, but a lot of times just roll, man.
Here's a more pointed question. Do you have any advice for me?
Jeez, you're 23. Just roll, man.
Just roll.
Be honest with yourself. Not that that's always easy. And realize that you will make mistakes. I make mistakes. You will fall down. And sometimes you need to stay down for a minute and just collect yourself, and that's okay.
Hmm.
When you're ready, stand up.
Mm-hmm. All right.
All right, brother.
All right, brother.
Thank you.
Thank you.